tonight. We are looking forward to your words of Torah and inspiration. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you for inviting me. I was saying on the way up here that I had the good fortune. I used to teach here for a bunch of semesters a while ago. I taught in the business school. And my first semester here, they invited us for Shabbos. Are there seniors in the room? Were you there? Any seniors in the room? Was that here for? So I had this chance to spend with my. I brought my wife who went here to Stern. She was having all these like flashbacks and like forget about it. I was speaking about this here, and I saw her ring here, and I hated this teacher here, or I love this teacher here. And we came with supposed to come back and spend Shabbos in this room. I think a lot went on in this room. So it was very, very sweet and wonderful. And we had a really good chance to spend some time with the power of Stern. The power of who you guys are, what you stand for, what you represent, and being around it for a weekend really, really sort of nailed it home with who you are and what you mean for the Jewish community. So it's a source for me to be here. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day. It's late at night for being here. And I hope that by the end, hopefully we give comfort to the Melech, and hopefully there's something that you can take away with to really forge a path closer to what really Pesach is all about. That's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about where we are right now. One of the greatest mistakes that we make is that when we think about holidays, we see them as times to commemorate. When you go to people and say, how come you do X, Y, and Z? I have a friend of mine who I one time invited over for Shabbos. He wasn't from. Great guy. Wasn't yet connected. I'll never forget. He came over to my house for Shabbos. And I tell the story all the time. And like, he didn't want to come, and he came, and he didn't want to come, and he came. And finally, like, I'm like, you got to come. Like, when the Shabbos starts, like, Shabbos is like 5:15. And it's like 5 o'clock, he's not there. And it's like 5:10, he's not there. And it's like 5:14. And I'm like, I can't wait anymore. I got to go to shul. Shul's in 5 minutes. And I go to leave, and I open the door, and he's literally standing in my front door. I'm like, and he's literally in a shirt, jeans, and like a pack of six pack of Coronas. And I'm in a suit. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, why are you in a suit? Are you going to a wedding? I'm like, why are you? What's with the Coronas? I'm like, get outside the house. I put him in the house. I give him a suit. I slept at the shul. I dived in a really late big shul called Eish Kodesh in Woodmere. And the place is rocking. And he's like, what is going on over here? And I think of home. And you know what it's like when you invite someone who's never kept Shabbos in his whole life. So he's making all the typical rookie mistakes. You know what I'm talking about? Like when the challah comes out and you go like four pieces into challah. You know what I'm talking about? Like the rookie. I'm like, oh, such a rookie. You have no idea what's coming next. You've never been here before. And he's like, this is delicious. I'm like, oh my God. And then all of a sudden the appetizer comes out. This is delicious. And I'm just like, oh. The meat, the chicken, the sweet kugel, sour kugel, the salad. And he's like, his eyes are getting like bigger and bigger and bigger. And then finally the meal's over. He's like, this is the best meal of my life. And my wife's like, who's time for dessert? He goes, there's dessert. I'm like, it's Shabbos. If you don't chocolate, like it's a dessert or something, right? And like, we bring my dessert, like the real dessert, which is the chocolate, not like the fake healthy dessert, as if you're healthy on Shabbos. And then, by the way, when the meal is over, what do? Like, you have stuff like tzeit l'derech, you know what I'm talking about? Like, you have like, just in case you get hungry on the way to your room, there's like popcorn for the walk. So should you have a second of breathing and not eating on Shabbos, and that's really a failure in the hostess. And he comes to the guy, and I go into his room. He looks at me, and he goes, Charlie, goes, you guys have Thanksgiving every single week? I'm like, wait for tomorrow. He goes, there's a tomorrow? So when you ask someone about what we do, the whole conversation was, well, what is Thanksgiving? And what do we do? Well, I don't know. It's a meal you get together. And a long time ago, people, you know, Thanksgiving meal, they were Indians and they were pilgrims and they must have ate cranberry sauce and watched football. And then they got together and they said, thank you. So we have Thanksgiving meal. Well, what do you do? Well, a long time ago, God created the world and he must have been tired on the sixth day, I guess, right? And so he rested. So as a result that he rests, we have to eat a lot of food and rest too. And that's how we represent. And what's Pesach? Well, a long, long time ago, there was once a time where like my mom thought of something besides feeding us, like getting out of Egypt alive. So she forgot to bake the bread and she came out and there was bad bread. And as a result, we have bad bread and we have matzah and then we dip. And why do we do it for? Because we do it because that's what they did. And that's what we do. We're commemorating what took place a long time ago. Why? Because that's what Jews do. And if I don't go, I'm going to be upset. And my grandmother survived the Holocaust or something. And you ask most people, why do we do what we do? And their answer is, because that's what they did. Because we think that Judaism is commemorative. But nothing could be further from the truth. Judaism is not commemorative. It's not how it works. We're too busy to commemorate things that did a long time ago. Judaism is dynamic. We do things because the way it really works is that what we see in front of us is a world that's physical. But what the world really is inside the physical is the world of spiritual. If you can almost picture for the science major in the room, sitting in a lab, and on one side of, so to speak, in the room, there is vapor, and the professor takes the vapor and moves it into colder environments. That vapor turns into liquid, which turns into solid. Ultimately, the elements of the vapor is not the solid. The solid is just the environment that the vapor is in. This world that we live in is physical. That's not the world that we believe in. Just because I can feel it doesn't mean it's more true. Just because I can see it and sense it doesn't make it more true. The world that we believe in, the world that we live off, is the world of the spirit. It's ruchnius. That's why if someone's sick in Israel, we have a havami that's walk into a room in New York and say some words from someone who lived a long time ago and somehow think that because I say a word, somehow some doctor in Israel is going to help somebody. What? How does that even work? The answer is that in the physical world, it doesn't work. But if you believe that the world is spiritual, yeah, saying something here, if it's the right word, could impact the spiritual world everywhere. It's not bound by time and space. We live in a world that is the face of something so much deeper. And when we live in a spiritual world, we operate with a body called the physical. There are different rules. The world operates totally differently. And what Judaism does for a living is tell the world, I know you think this is just another day, but it's not. Behind this day, it's different than this day. I know you think it's just another food, but it's not. Because behind this food is different than this food. And I know you think that this person and that person are the same as this person and that person, but they're not, because they have different rules, because they're related and they're married. What we do for a living is tell the world that I know it looks like it's physical, but it's not. It's just a manifestation of something that's so much deeper. And when you live on a deeper plane, you operate much differently. And the reason why we have holidays is not because they did something. Who cares what they did? We're not commemorating everything that ever happened and ever after our history. It's because the way it works is that right now, in every single day, in every single moment, there's certain spirituality. You can almost picture every single moment as a different spirituality. That's why Shacharis and Mincha and Musaf and Maariv are totally different tefillahs. That's why Shabbos is different. The week after Rosh Chodesh is different. That's why every aspect of everything is different. But there are certain times a year something happens in the spiritual world. When someone, he was literally said to me, Daddy, can you explain to me how voltage works? He was a little kid. I'm like, here's how I can explain it to you. See that charger over there? If you see that outlet, if you take your charger, when I was growing up, we actually plug things in. Nothing only plug in today is a charger. You know what I'm talking about? What is the number one most valuable thing you have in your house right now? A charger. You can have 15 phones. There's only one charger, right? Then your house too, or just my house? And everyone's claiming the charger, you have that? But it's my charger. What do you mean? It's my charger. It has my initials. You have the same last name. We all have the same initials. You have that? You ever have those new charger rules? You know what I'm talking about? You know the new charger rules that came out? Did ever happen to anyone here where you plug your phone, you go to bed, you wake up, and you see your phone not in the charger, but next to the charger? You ever have this too? And you're like, why'd you take out my phone? And you're like, oh, well, I looked at your phone, it was 71%. Mine only is 72%. You know what I'm talking about? Like, what? Because you have less percent that you can pull it out? You ever have that? Like, there's new rules for chargers. I was once at a Pesach program, I kid you not, and a woman came down with her phone and her charger. She sat at lunch. I watched this. She plugged her phone into her charger. She sits down to eat. Another lady gets up, walks up to her phone, looks at it, and then unplugs her phone and puts in her phone. And the woman's like, oh, I'm sorry, that's my charger. She's like, yeah, I know, but you have 72%. I'm only at 55. She's like, what, that's a rule now? Like, if you have to, like, share your charger if the percentage is lower with your friend? Anyone have that? You know why we're so crazy with chargers for? Because you know what the greatest fear that we have? When I was growing up, my grandparents, you know what their greatest fear was? Hunger. They didn't eat. You know what the greatest fear people have today is? Low battery. Because if Apple pings you, and you get that little yellow thing on your phone, I was like, really? You can charge your phone? Bing, now you're on low battery. And you're like, oh my God, what if it dies and I leave? What if I leave the dorm and it dies and then I'm going to be able to find me? I can't call anybody. I can't Waze it. I can't shop online. What if I'm online and I don't have my phone? I have to, like, just do nothing for, like, a minute? A minute, die. I don't have that, like, panic except for me. So I was telling my son, he's like, if you put your charger into the outlet, it'll turn on. But if I went out to Yankee Stadium and brought all the lights in and put it into the outlet, it won't turn on. You know why? Because we have electricity, but we don't have enough voltage. There's times a year where Kadosh Baruch Hu increases the voltage in something very specific. There are times a year where he goes into the outlet and he turns up something. And in the spiritual world, it's rocking with something. The energy is so high that if you can find a wall and plug in your charger, you're going to be a different person. If you show up in Kislev for Tshuva, awesome. It doesn't even come close if you show up in Tishrei for Tshuva, because when you roll into Tishrei, the idea, the spirituality of renewal is so high that a Jew can plug his soul or her soul in and change herself. When you show up during the time of Tisha B'Av and you're looking for Hashem in the moments of Tzar and you're in the zone of Av, you can see a piece of Hashem in a way you can't see throughout the year. You can always see Hashem. But there are some times where that spirituality is high. And what we do for a living is try to figure out what we're doing and know where the plugs are. So everything we do is not because they did it, because everything we do is a spiritual outlet that I plug into through my mouth, through my words, through my hands. Because if I'm plugging into matzah, if I'm plugging into Seder, if I'm plugging into certain words, my soul is attaching itself to spirituality. That's going to change me, for me. Not because God is up there going, can you please eat some more matzah? You don't have enough indigestion yet. Pesach and Purim, we're like in the middle. It's like, we're in the craziest time of year. It's like unbelievable. We are ending Adar and beginning Nisan. We are like standing in between the two greatest moments of our lives. The first redemption, the last major Purim redemption, the fight against Paro, the fight against Amalek. We're like in between greatness and greatness. And if you tap into this now, today, in your life, if you walk in for the next 2 weeks with a little bit of what I need to tap into, you will come into Pesach, and it won't just be another thing that I do that may be in the way of my career, jobs, grades, that may be a fun time with my family, which is a good idea because family is amazing, but it'll be so much deeper. You can tap into something that's going to change you forever. 2%. And that's where we are. So I want to start from the beginning. I heard this once from a Rebbe for me. A question that stuck with me for a long time. Do you ever notice when it comes to names, names mean a lot. Names are supposed to encompass all that you are. Anyone here who's on a committee and you got a name to committee, you'll know how long it takes to get a name for a committee. I spend a lot of time with companies. This is what I do for a living. So a lot of times when I deal with a company and they're starting something, for them to pick a name of their company, they're hiring people and spending tens of thousands of dollars for picking their name. Because if you pick a good name, everyone knows who you are and it's creative. It changes your whole business. Pesach is the beginning of our nation. It's the first holiday we got. It's the time that we became us. If you were on the naming committee for that holiday, if you were chosen, today was a night, there was a workshop that God said, listen, Charlie, speaking to Stern, these girls are amazing. I got to get them to name something. Can you get them to name the first holiday? What would you name Pesach? If you had a choice and you had to pick out the theme of Pesach, and you could put it together and come up with one great name that would be what Pesach is, what would it be? What would we be thinking about? Independence, nationhood, maybe you would say freedom, mission, the Jewish people. You'd come up with a name that represents us being saved and starting up. What's the name that they choose? Pesach. Anyone have a problem with that? Pesach? Why? Well, someone's going to raise their hand and go, I got my name. How about Passover? Pesach. Okay, why? Well, on the 10th plague, when God was killing everybody else, he didn't kill us. You're like, okay, well, that's sort of how plagues work, right? Like, it wouldn't be a plague if he killed Jews too, right? Isn't that what happened from plagues 1 to 9 as well? And isn't the whole purpose of the plagues just to get you out? Like, plagues were important. And I know, like, maybe, like, it's fun to watch, but, like, the goal of the plague was really to just get you out of the room. I'm like, yeah, but I think that's a cool part. that one little like nuance in this entire year long story of when we're, you know, the tenth plague, you didn't, you know, kill us. And that's what we go with. That makes sense to anybody? That the name of our nation, it's not called Yom Ha'atzmaut, it's not called Independence Day, it's called Pesach for one little nuance along the way of every other plague in which he passed over us. He passed over us presumably for blood, for Dam Tzvadeh, Kinim Arav Devish, right? That's how it works when you're in a plague. The Jews aren't going to get killed. And yet for that, why do we pick Pesach as the name? So this, by the way, is called, he calls it, I think it's great, called the Lullaby Effect. Anybody know what the Lullaby Effect is? You guys have all taken it? Lullaby Effect's the best. Today, I don't think kids have lullabies anymore. Today, like, I think it's just like versions of Hamalach. But like, when I grew up, my mom sang me a lullaby. Anyone ever heard a lullaby before? They still sing those things, lullaby? So, do you ever actually hear the words of a lullaby? The purpose of a lullaby is to soothe a child in the arms of his or her mom so that he or she can be comfortable with the full sleep. Have you ever heard the actual lyrics to a lullaby? Rock a by baby on a treetop. And the kid's like, wait, you're putting me on top of a tree? When the wind blows, the cradle, and the kid's like, wait, you're putting me on top of a tree on a windy day? What are you, nuts? And then someone gets only better. When the bough breaks, the cradle will fall. Kid's like, the kid falls out of the tree, and down will come baby, cradle on. The kid's like, are you even my mom? I'm calling the cops. If you don't go to sleep, I'm going to throw you in front of a train. What were they on in some place in L.A.? I don't know. What was going on the West Coast when they were making these things? But yet, it works. Do you know why? Because the way lullaby works is when you do things again and again and again and again, you sort of forget about the words. This is called the lullaby effect. One of the most important aspects of Judaism is that there's nothing in Judaism that we should ever look to and go, oh, that's because. Everything that doesn't make any sense needs to be questioned. This, I think, is pretty obvious. The name of our first holiday seems to make no sense. So why do everything that they call it Pesach? So what I want to do now for a few minutes, I want to go back and then we'll go forward. Because we're in between those two worlds. We're in between Adar and Nisan, Purim and Pesach, and the enemies are all interconnected. And I want to talk about what the Jews are going to face, because when you understand what they're up against, you understand who they are. When the Jews come out, they face one enemy. The enemy we just almost, so to speak, ended up fighting against. What enemy is that? What is our... If we look at every single enemy that we hate in the world, there is one that is ole al gabeim. There is one that is worse than all. Who am I speaking about? Amalek. There's something about Amalek. Everybody, by the way, everyone tries to kill us, right? And then Shem saves us, we turn them into food. It's a great process. But there's one enemy that somehow we've managed... is not to have not forgotten about. And so what we do for this enemy is we give them a Shabbaton. The Shabbaton is called Parshas Zachor. You know what's amazing about Parshas Zachor? It's the point. Why do we have Parshas Zachor for? Because, here, follow the logic of this, okay? The reason we have Parshas Zachor is because we are charged with erasing the memory of Amalek. Timche Ezecher Amalek. We are supposed to erase their memory. So in order to erase the memory, you know what we do? We have a Shabbos dedicated to them. And you know what we do on the Shabbos? Following? We? Be with me? Out loud? We remember them. This is brilliant, no? Amalek, nobody in the world remembers Amalek, right? We don't even know who they are. So we just give people the title Amalek. The Nazis, Amalek. The guy that shot bombs on themselves, Amalek. The guy who failed in my road test, Amalek. You know what I'm talking about? Two Jews are fighting like Medina, no Medina, Medina, no Medina. They're calling each other Amalek. When you walk on the streets and call someone Amalek, I think you're cursing at them. And nobody in the world, it's over. Like, we win. Like, how much longer can we hold on to this grudge? There's no Amalek schools. There's no Amalek. No one's speaking tonight at, like, the Amalek version of Stern, talking about whatever holidays they have. There's no place they go. There's no airline. There's no flag. Amalek is gone. We won. Like, it's over. Like, enough. Enough. Like, can you be obsessed about something that's totally irrelevant? The only people that are still in the world that actually remember Amalek? Is anyone following this with me? Or is anyone as upset as I am right now? Are the people charged to erase their memory? The only people that remember them are us. Nobody else except for like this room and like a few thousand more of us actually know what I mean when I say the word Amalek. And it's only because we have a Shabbaton in which we read, forget Amalek. Nobody's troubled except for me. I have a great idea. It's called the Harari Plan. I'm not a rabbi, so I guess I can't enforce it. Why don't you just knock out Parsha Zachor, put Amalek back in the regular readings in the summer where everyone's either in camp or in the bungalow colony and spacing out. And in a couple of years, someone will go up there and go, hey, Amalek, and you'll be like, nah, do we have a test on that? And like, you know, Bible 101? We're like, no. And no. And then we will actually erase their memory. Right? Wouldn't that make more sense? You with me? Can I get a yay? Are you with me?
Yeah.
You guys a little tired? It's okay. So I'll tell you a story. So I've got a couple of hobbies. I have a few obsessions, I should say hobbies, because hobbies would sound like I'm normal. One of my obsessions is the Israeli army. I love the Israeli army. I think in my previous life, I was in Bar Kokhba's army. I'm positive. My kids, like, I'm like, you sure you don't want to be a sniper when you get older? Like, my kids, when they're like, what do you want to do? I'm trying to get my children to go into the, if they would call me and say, hey, Charlie, you want to join them? I'd be like, Dina, like, my wife's in Dina. Dina, like, it's been a pleasure. This is awesome, but, you know, sorry. They call. I don't know. There's something. I take a trip to Israel every year with a bunch of men, like 200 guys. The first thing we do when we get up on the tour, we get up, we go right to Latrun, and we bring out soldiers. This is just like, I don't know, something about the Israelis. I just love the fact. Because I got to tell you, I hate the whole Jew weak thing. I'm not a big Jew is weak thing. I don't believe it. I don't buy it. I hate what they make us look like. I hate it that they turn the Holocaust into like Jews are sheep. I hate that people like when we're weak. I like when we're strong. I like a Jew being it. I like when I think of a Jew. I like when someone who, when he's walking down the street, he doesn't cross the street. I don't like when people think they can beat us up. Personally. It's like a personal thing. So when I see a bunch of Israeli guys in guns, I'm like, love you guys, you know what I'm saying? Like, you want to like carry on? Okay, that's cool. No, it's fine. But more power to you, right? So I like follow the army online. Like, I have like a little, like, you know, obsession for like, because I think, like, just in case the Mossad calls, like, I should be up to date. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I should know. Oh, Mossad calls, like, oh, for that mission? I've been reading it online, so I know exactly what you're talking about. So I'll just get in the indescript black car and just go kill somebody with my hands. So, for those of you who are following world history, there's this guy, used to be a guy, now he's been knocked him out. There's this country across the world called Iran. And Iran's got a very original new idea. You ready for this? Because it's going to blow you away. You ready? Iran wants to destroy the Jewish people. No one's ever thought that one before. And Iran's like, I've got an idea. Why don't we destroy the Jewish people? So they come up with this thing, like, let's create a nuclear bomb, for those that are watching, and we're going to send the bomb into Israel and destroy the Jewish people. Awesome. I'm so excited to see when we ultimately beat Iran, I'm just so pumped for the food that we're going to make from Iran. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be like Sephardi food, some hummus, whatever. So for those who have followed as long as I have, the past 10 years, Iran had this idea for a long time, and for like 2 years, it basically went offline. And all of a sudden, it came back years later, but for like 2 or 3 years, nobody heard a word from the Iranian nuclear program. And if you're on the right websites, or if you read any news, like, what happened was, Iran was protecting itself from Israel. 1981, Iran's neighbor, Iraq, had the same idea. Shocker. Let's build a nuclear bomb and kill the Jewish people. What the Israelis did, for those who saw this, there's a great book if you ever want to read it called Raid on the Sun. The Israelis sent an F-16 pilots, and they bombed the entire nuclear facility. And then that was it. So Iran put together the greatest ground-to-air missiles that we have today. They literally, around their facilities, basically line them with the most sophisticated technology to spot and to detect any Israeli aircrafts. Israel, being Israel, figured that they'll only do that. So what they did was they teamed up with America, the CIA, and they developed the most sophisticated computer virus known to man. And the virus is called the Stuxnet virus. And they had one of the Mossad spies go into the facility. It's awesome, right? Aren't you like so excited already? And they put the virus in their computers. And as the Iranian scientists tried to find the virus, it just redoubled and regenerated until it basically turned the entire facility into just metal. Destroyed the entire facility. Now, first of all, how much pride do you have right now? I have a lot. In my mind, here's what I'm picturing. Tell me if you, just for a few minutes, can we go back to like Iran together, all of us? and just be like in the desert. It's like boiling hot. And can you picture like a bunch of Iranian National Guard guys standing on top of ground-to-air missiles, staring up at the sky, like egging on the Israelis, like, where are the Israelis? Is jihad? Is jihad? You know what I'm talking about? Sounds disgusting because none of them ever used deodorant, you know what I'm talking about? And they're like yelling Arabic, you know what I'm saying? Like, Allah Akbar. And meanwhile, there's like a virus going on that's being controlled by like two Israelis, like in a bunker in Dimona. You know what I'm talking about? Like, two Israelis, like drinking like Turkish coffee with the mud because they're that tough. Dipping olives and hummus, talking like a million miles an hour. Yoni! Davinita! And the two of these guys are on a computer, and the entire facility is crumbling. And they're like, they're so wicked. What's going on? And it gives me so much joy. I came here just to tell the story in public. You guys know. No? The Iranians made the number one mistake in warfare. They assumed that because the enemy wasn't coming at them in the same way, the enemy wasn't there at all. Why in the world do we hate Amalek? So stick with me just for a few minutes. It's late, but I want you to get this. Why are we so obsessed with Amalek? So you got to get Yetzias Mitzrayim to get Amalek, because Pesach and Purim are bounded. This is one period of time. There's a reason why when there's two Adars, they punt Purim to Adar Beis, because you can't get Pesach until you get Purim, and you can't tell Purim until you get Pesach. It's one long story. And the story is of us. And the biggest mistake we make is we think that the reason why the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim happened was to get us out. You ask a kid, why did God bring 10 plagues? You know what the number one answer for why God brought 10 plagues is? Because Hashem was trying to get the Jewish people, help me with the end of the sentence, out of Egypt. Really? Really? God, who created Paro, needed Paro's permission to take his... For real? You couldn't have taken the ninth plague, Choshech, in which you couldn't even move, it was so dark, and move it to number one and be like, hey, Moshe, here's the deal. Tuesday at 2, lights are out on Egypt for the next week. They could be drinking cafe hafuch in Mamila Mall before Egypt's like, oh my gosh, huh, where do the Jews go? We needed power to be like, please? No. There wasn't one plague that ever happened because God's like, can you pretty please let them out now? Okay, dumb. Now, okay, frogs. Now, please, does Paro like me, Moshe? Does he like me? Because I'm trying so hard. No, God could care less. Paro was a toy. What was going on at the time, and this is so critical, is every single person at that time believed in God. That's how life worked in antiquity. No one was an atheist in antiquity. You couldn't, your crops, everything, what they believed in was the sun, the moon, the stars. They believed in powers. Every single person had their God in which they served. But every single person had one thing in common in their belief structure. That the God that they served was up there, totally and completely uninterested in what was taking place down here. So if you were good to me, if I killed people or killed animals or ran around a campfire, whatever I did in my religion, if I got you going, you would bring rain or bring wind or bring sun or whatever I needed from you. But me and you, if the relationship of me and you is you are a disinterested power and I'm just a little plebeian on the ground and I have to honor and kiss up to you. That's how religion worked back then. When Moshe comes up to Paro and says, hey, Paro, well, I want to let the Jews out. Paro didn't say no. You know what Paro said? Me Hashem Asher Eshma Bekolo. I don't know who you're talking about. I represent Hashem. He's like, who is Hashem? And he pulls up a list, the Medrash says, of every single god. Rock, stone, the guy fasting in the corner, the sun, and he goes, he's not even on my list. The goal of Egypt wasn't to get us out. God wasn't trying to save us. God was using us. He always uses us. Wouldn't it be so easy for Hashem to poof his hands and now all of a sudden everyone forgets about Israel? Wouldn't it have been better if Israel would have been in Australia? Wouldn't that make more sense? If you have a nation and a chosen land, wouldn't it make more sense to put it in the corner of the world, surrounded by water, and we could just like go learn all day? Because he's not trying to save us. He's trying to use us. He used us. He used the fact that we were there so that him and Paro could go off on each other. Because Paro was just a guy. He was the entire world. Right now, America's in the epicenter of civilization. For however much longer this lasts, we are in the middle of the world. Today, when you go to Europe, everybody in Europe knows our politics. They know what's going on in Congress. They all hate Donald Trump. They all love whoever. And they know our politics. If you ask most people to name five European countries, they're like, London, France, Spain, right? If it wasn't for the live map on the Al Al flight, we wouldn't even know that Europe even exists. You know what I'm talking about? We're like, no, I can't watch that movie again. Oh, let's look at the live map. Oh, that's where that country is? Hey, check this out. I didn't know that Europe was here. Look, we're almost in Israel. You know why? Because it doesn't matter. I mean, maybe it matters a little bit, but it really doesn't. Because the entire world is really coming out of a couple of places. And Europe used to be the most important place in the world. And unfortunately, and I love Europe, if you're European, I love you and your family and everything about you. But it doesn't matter. Nobody cares about Denmark because really nothing's happening in Denmark. In Denmark, they're important. But on the world stage, nobody in the world is like, I hope Denmark works out. But everybody is worried about America because we're in the center of civilization. Well, guess what? Back then, the center of civilization was Egypt. They just control the world's food 5 minutes ago with the Osei. And as Jews, we know how important that is. Everybody is watching Egypt. Guess what? Paro wasn't the president. Paro was the dictator. Paro represented Egypt. When God went against Paro, God put us in Egypt specifically because he wanted us to be on the world stage. Understand that we're in the New York Times every week for some small, because the Times covers the fact that we built an apartment building, that's not like, I can't believe this is happening. That's how it always happened. He puts us on the world stage and then goes off against Paro in the battle of who I am. If those of you who want to go deep into this, I'll give 2 seconds of this. In the Haggadah, there's one part that also makes very little sense. As you're reading the Haggadah, it says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda Nasa Behem Simanim, Rabbi Yehuda gave Simanim for the Makos. So what did you say? What were the Simanim? The Tzach, with me together, Adash Be'acha. Anybody have a problem with that? What was he doing? He was giving a mnemonic. What do you give a mnemonic for? To remember things. They had mnemonics back then. You know what they use mnemonics for? Tarsha Ba'al Peh, because it was Ba'al Peh. You know what they didn't have mnemonics for? Tarsha Bechsav, because it was, you're going to follow this with me, right? Bechsav. You don't do mnemonics when you have the book. Why would Rehuda do a mnemonic for Dams for their king, right? The Makas were in Tarsha Bechsav. The answer is he wasn't giving a mnemonic. You know what he was doing? Watch this. This is phenomenal. I heard this once. This book. Anybody who wants this little shear, email me, charlie@charlieharari.com. I will send this to you for your Seder. It blew me away when I heard it for the first time, and I turned it into a chart. You know what he was doing? You know what he was doing? He was the ultimate teacher. He was actually teaching Paro who I am in 3 modules. Module 1 is called Datach. And if you follow, just for a minute, stick with me, I'm sorry. If you notice, there are 3 ways Makas comes. Moshe goes to the Nile, Moshe goes to the palace, and goes without warning. Watch this. Datsach is module 1. Nile, palace, nothing. Adash is module 2. Nile, palace, nothing. Bachav is now 3. Nile, palace, nothing. You know why? Because every lesson started in the Nile, was reinforced in the palace, and ended with no warning. Because it was 3 lessons. The Makas wasn't to get us out. You know what the Makas were? God 101. Module 1, Ani Hashem. Go through the circle. Just do it for a few minutes for the Seder. It's going to blow you away. Everything that went on in the first three Makas was him and the Chartumim battling. Dam, Chartumim said, we do this too, and there's no way to get it. There's no mention that Hashem had to pull it out. Tzardeya, Chartumim could do it, but they couldn't get rid of it. Kenan, what did the Chartumim say? He wins. Check. We win. Game, set, match. Module 2, Ani Hashem, Bekerav Haaretz. Not only am I Hashem, I live in this world. Arbe is animals going around. How does the animal know that kid's Egyptian, that kid's Jewish? I'm going to show you. Deber, how did you know that that we're in the same stable and this animal's Jewish is half Egyptian? Because I'm going to show you I live in this world. And Shin, how did you know which one's who to get a boy? Because God goes, not only am I here, I live here. I'm not up there, I live here. The last module is Inkamoni. There's no one like me. That's why Barak was fire and water, unbelievable. Arba was, if you look at the Pasukim, never happened before, never happened again. And Hoshit was a natural phenomenon. And the last thing, Makos B'chosh was all three together. And the mark that we use for this, not for now, for you and me, I'll send you this year, is Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Elokeinu. Shema Yisrael Hashem, Hashem is here, Ani Hashem. Elokeinu, there's no one like him, Echad, he's in this world. The goal of Yetzias Mitzrayim was, God is not just the power up there. Everybody believes that there's a power up there. Everybody has always believed that there's somebody or something up there that if I can just kiss up to enough, that thing will hook me up. We are not the first and we are not the last people to think that there's someone up there giving out gold coins if you follow some ritual, that the only reason why you do it is because your grandmother did it and that's what they did a long time ago because it's Thanksgiving, just the Jewish version. That always happened, and that always will happen. Religion as defined as meaningless rituals to kiss up to powerful God to get what I want is how everybody always was religious. And God goes, that's not how I roll. He used much more holier language than that. But he wasn't from Brooklyn. That's where I'm from. What I do, God says, is I don't live. I'm not just Ani Hashem. Ani Hashem bekerev ha'aretz. You know where I live? On the ground with my people. Look at the Haggadah. You know what the Haggadah is? It's crazy. If you think about this, it goes out of nowhere. Out of nowhere, what does it say? Ani, below Malach, below Saraf, Bechvodo Uba'ah. Who cares? You think Moshe mentioned Haggadah? Not once. That's not fair. He hooked us up. No, he didn't. He was a Shaliach of who? Of the greatest paradigm shift of history. That the creator of the universe is not too disinterested in small little ants called human beings. I don't know how this happened to us, but somehow we adopted everyone else's way of thinking. I don't know when we became like this, but we became this type also. We think that the way Judaism works is Amazon spiritual shopping. I need things, you need things. I need grades, if your husband, some health, some money, let's rock this up. You need Hebrew words and long skirts and kosher food, so let's make a deal. I'll give you what you want, and if I can do like what's called a skula, and I'm sorry, I'm all into skulas, but most people look at skulas as just a way to, most people look at skulas as like Amazon Prime. I'm not waiting on mine. I'll pay $10 more a month, and I'll get Prime, because I said this 15 times. So since I said it, then all of a sudden, I'm just ordering it. Click, 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 click. And by the way, do you know how many times a week I get a call from somebody having a crisis of faith? When I ask him or her what the crisis is, it comes down to, I've been religious my whole life, and I've been dogmatic, and I don't have it yet. That's the crux. Not people died, not Holocaust, not major illness. Basically, I was told as a kid, if you want to have a good life, follow along. And anyone here want to blow off your... Oh, you don't want to blow off your kipper. Because you know what happens then? You get put in the bad book. Most of us, what's our option, basically? Benoni or Russia. D or F. D or F. D. Don't you? Can you get a little loud? Can you scream a little bit more? Because if not, you're going to have a bad year. Just follow along. Amazon spiritual shopping. And I don't know. God's up there. Where's most people? They go, where's God? Ask me, where's Hashem? And they go, I don't know, where's Hashem? I don't know. He's probably there, right? He's probably got a beard, right? Probably white beard right now. If you're naughty, he doesn't give you presents. And if you're nice, he gives you presents. It's awesome that Hashem has become Santa Claus. Right? Ask anybody, where's God? Ain't then? You ever have it? Where's heaven? Uh-huh. There? I know, it's probably like light. I'm sure there's going to be a pool, right? It's heaven. There's got to be food. It's kosher, right? The Jewish program. People think we die and go to a Pesach program our whole lives. You know, there's going to be bread, right? So we die and go to a Sephardi Pesach program our whole lives. Don't mention the Sephardim in the room, work it up. What? When did this happen? When did we become people that look at religion as a bunch of rituals that happened a long time ago and we do them to kiss up to some divine power who's like trying to get us what we want? Moshe shows up and Hashem goes, that's not how I roll. You know where I live? I'm not up here. Hashem's not up. Come on. You know where Hashem is? Anybody want to know? In. Let's get a little Kabbalistic for a minute, can we? Lean in. The way it works, something called the Or, anyone who's ever studied a little bit of sort of what you call it. The Or Ein Sof is the light that emanates from Atzmus, which is Hashem. Me and you are the congealed Or Ein Sof, a little ray of that Or, not the whole thing. We are not equal to God. What me and you are congealed manifestations of the divine. Hashem's not up. There is no up. The sky is up. You know where Hashem is? Hashem is in. When we speak to Hashem, we're not speaking up. You know who we're speaking? We're speaking in. We're speaking to the tunnel that's inside me that heads up to the Or Ein Sof, because I'm a piece of the Or Ein Sof. I'm a chelek of the Or Ein Sof, a chelek Elokav Ma'al. That means that I speak to people all the time, and they tell me, I'm this religious, I'm that religious, I'm into it, I'm not into it, I'm into it. I'm like, stop. You have more ruchnius inside you than you can ever use in your entire lives. We have more spirituality built into the system than we'll ever need, ever. No one ever has to become spiritual. No one ever has to become something. You already are all of it. All you have to do in life is reveal what is really inside you already. Searching for God in the level of panemius is just self-exploration, because you can't fully find yourself if you're not able to tap into the part of yourself that is connected to the divine. Hashem's not up. When I look at you, I'm looking at you. What's connecting? The reason why me and you are in the same room right now, I'm a total stranger to you. It's because at the level of physical, we don't know each other. But one level into the world of panemius, we're related. We're from the same spark. God's not outside. He's in the marriage. He's in the food. He's in my career. Everywhere I look is just a manifestation of divine energy. Hashem says, you think that I'm up and disinterested? You know where I live? Bekeref Haaretz. That's how I know which animal doesn't belong to an Egyptian. That's how I know which firstborn is from which mother, because I exist in this world. I don't exist up there looking down. I'm not like hooking up people that I like because I'm too bored or because I'm so overwhelmed with the tzaddikim, like regular people I don't have enough time for. If your eyes are open, you're congealed pieces of Hashem. And what's going to happen, Hashem says, is this whole world doesn't even know that. So we're going through 10 plagues, because when you're done with 10 plagues, the entire world will at least know that I exist in the care of our hearts for you. He used us. And he always uses us. Our job in life isn't for him to hook us up. He turns us and goes, hook you up? You want a comfortable life? You're in the wrong religion. I'm sorry. You're a Navy SEAL. Like, I'm sorry that doesn't work out for those who don't want to really move a little bit. You're a Navy SEAL. The whole world's going to watch you. You're not going to have a country that no one's paying attention to until Mashiach comes. Even when Mashiach comes. You're not going to be able to do something that no one's going to know. If you stumble and fall, you're going to be on the cover of the Times. I'm sorry. There's another people that do it. It doesn't matter. It's going to be this way. You know why? Because your job, I'm using you to go out into the world and to show people and to show yourself that you know where I live? Here. How we talk, how we act, how we walk. The fact that we can walk out of a room on Friday at 2 o'clock and turn to our bosses and go, you think I'm going to... Wait, you think I'm scared of you? You think I'm gonna stay here Friday night because I'm worried about my job? You think, you're like, what? You think, what? You think like, no. What do you mean, no? You ever tell me I had that question? Wait, you're just gonna leave? It's Friday. It's a big deal. I'm like, yeah, it's a big deal. It's Friday night. No, but you, I mean, no much. You know who runs this world? Yeah, he runs. You think I think you run the world? I'm so sorry. No, you don't. Are you gonna fire me? No, you're not. Because it's 2010. I'm like, grandmother. Hasta luego. See you Saturday night. Or better yet, in October. I'll see you like in December when I'm done with my holidays. And you walk out and go, what? What? You walk down the street? How you talk, how you act, how you walk. You know what you show people? You know where God exists? That's our job. That's why we're here. Everything else is a detail. Everything you do is a detail. Everything we do attention was a detail to the one mission of we are in this world because we stand for Ani Hashem Bekerev Haaretz. We don't commemorate stuff. We're not a bunch of robots. We don't sit around and do things for the good things. We don't fall to the lullaby effect. We're not too busy for God. And that started in the battle between Paro and Hashem, and he lost big time. You have to understand something. It's hard for us to appreciate this. But when the Jews left Egypt, Asnif Halu Alfei Edom, everyone in Bayosha, right? The entire world. The crazy. Now, Molo Koyosha Ekanan, everybody watched us leave. You know what they said? Maybe they're right. I don't know. Look at these guys. No one ever left Egypt before. You know that measures, right? A bunch of slaves. I heard what happened. Remember the story of Yeshua when he sent in spies to Rachav? What did Rachav tell him? We all know. We're all watching. We watch it on Twitter every day. We're doing that. We're all sitting around and seeing when the Jews walked out of Egypt, everybody said, maybe Hashem took care of our earth. This is it. That was our job, right? Hashem used us. We came out. He split the sea. We were a little crazy. We were going straight to Yisrael. And then we were going to live, and everyone's going to say, I thought that Hashem lives up there. Apparently, the Hashem that created the world lives inside with people. This is amazing. You know what happened? We were flying to Eretz Yisrael. And there's one nation that just couldn't handle it. You look at our history, every nation hates us for one of two reasons. They think we're going to kill them, or they think that we're going to leech off them. We're too weak or too strong. Paro is where we're going to kill them. All the nations were going to kill them. We're either sucking out, like the Nazis, we suck out from society, or too strong for society. We're always a problem for somebody. The only time, the reason why they killed us was obviously theological, or the first time, to make it more accurate, Jews are in the desert. They're not hurting anybody. They're not attacking any nations. They already left Egypt. All that's happening is the world is going, maybe Hashem exists, b'kara ba'aretz. And one nation can't handle it. That is, all together now, excellent. No mistake. You know what they wanted? They didn't even want to win. They didn't even come to win. They were the first ever suicide bombers. Did you know that? You know what they wanted to do? They wanted to just draw blood. They were happy to die. They just wanted to draw blood. Because if you draw blood, you know what it says? Maybe, maybe not. So invincible, how'd they lose? How'd they lose people? How'd we get in? They're so invincible. If God is really with them and they're walking through seas, how is it that our nation was able to kill X amount of people? Rashi says it's like jumping into a hot water, a hot bath just to cool it off. You're going to burn yourself. They're okay dying. What they wanted to put in this world is not that they were better than us. They weren't atheists. What they wanted to bring to this world is just a little bit of suffix. That's why the Gematria of Malik is suffix. They just wanted to go, really? You ever speak to someone in their Baruch Hashem and you too much? Like, did you just come back from seminary? You just come back from seminary 5 minutes ago? Because you stopped at the Baruch Hashem? Come on, stop it. Stop it. Really? Really? That's why you got into that class? Really? That's what you saw down? Stop. I believe in God too. Stop. Calm down. God wasn't in your test. God isn't on your date. God isn't down the block. God's not with your friend. You didn't get the flight. Stop. You know what that's called? Suffolk. Is he really with me in the test? Or is he only with me in shul? Is he really with me in my relationships with other people? Or is he only with me when I'm praying to him in Hebrew? You know who gave that to us? Amalek. No, 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 believe in God. What else are we going to believe in? This is antiquity. But stop the whole Karabaris nonsense. Come on. B'chvodo u'b'atzmo. Stop it. Stop it. Moshe was an incredible leader. That's why he won the Six-Day War. The reason why we're the state of Israel is because of technology and because we... Stop. I got it. I'm believing... Come on. I'm a religious Jew. Stop. Calm down. Can you go back to Israel? Get. You know, when you tell these stories, you know what you get? Like, give it a few years. Anyone have that? Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. Give it a few years. Because in a few years, you'll be like the rest of us and only believe that Hashem exists in three places in the world. We will put that suffix right back in here, okay? Just stay a little longer. stay in America for a few more years, and we'll store that stuff like right back in, okay? Awesome. We'll put you into an Amazon.com. It'll be amazing. You know what the biggest mistake we make is? That we think we beat Amalek. We're so proud of ourselves. Oh, look at our nation. Army, F-15s, planes. Oh, come on, Amalek. We're sitting 15 hours from the Western Wall. That's amazing. There's no colleges for Amalek. So we look around and pat ourselves on the back. We're doing pretty well, aren't we? Amalek, they don't even exist anymore. We're here, and they're not. So we feel good about ourselves. You know what Kodesh Baruch Hu says? Oh, they're not here anymore? Uh-huh. Really? Guess what? I'm going to tell you when you're going to stop fighting. When Mashiach comes, they'll stop fighting. Until then, oh, they're here. Don't be an Iranian National Guardman. Well, you think because they're not, you think because they don't have a country, they're not here anymore. Well, that's what you think? Let me tell you how it works now. Amalek's not a people. You know what they are? They're a virus. And they exist in the hearts of all of us. You can look amazing, come from the right places, and walk down the streets, and in your heart is a little bit of Amalek going, oh, stop it. Oh, stop it. Every time one of us walks into a wall and thinks, Hashem doesn't have time for me. I'm not even religious. Do you know what I think? Hashem, oh, stop it. I know Hashem loves him and her because they walked uphill both ways without shoes while reciting all of Shas by heart, and they weren't even 2 years old yet. But me, do you know what's in my head? Trust me. If you know what's in my head, I guarantee you Hashem is not worrying about X, Y, and Z. Trust me. Trust me. And every time a Jew does that, you know what Amalek does? Drinking their Turkish coffee, they go, another one bites the dust. Which is a reference for anyone over the age of 35 here. You know what we're in this world for? Kodesh Baruch Hu goes, you know what you got to do? Get in the room. No, I get it. You're all important. Get in the room. I get it. Get in the room. No, get in the room. Zachar. As I said, Salacha Amalek, the Tzitzchim Eretz Mitzrayim. Yeah. When you came out of Mitzrayim, remember how awesome it was? Let me tell you, because you forgot, because 2019, you walked out of Mitzrayim, everybody got me. It was beautiful. I mean, it was beautiful. The world saw you, and your presence emanated inspiration. And we were going to have, it was going to be it. And they attacked you. Remember them. Because it's your job to eradicate their memory. It is our job to find a Amalek in my heart and get rid of it. And it's my job to see my friend who thinks that she's not important enough to be in the eyes of the divine and say, are you insane? Do you know how this thing works? He loves you for you. It's my job to encourage. It is my job to walk around with the pride of the way the Jews came at Egypt the first time. That's why we're here. How does this work in the Messiah? Stick with me just a few more minutes. So some of you may have seen this video that I did a couple of weeks ago. You may have, you may not, so I'll tell you the story. So about a month ago, a friend of mine was making a wedding in Miami. And I was in St. Louis for a speech, and I woke up in the morning and I got to the airport. Some of you have seen this video before? Anybody? Yeah? Okay, good. So I'll tell it. Can I tell you again? Is that all right? Good review. For those who didn't see it. So I'm in St. Louis, and this now I always have this was a mirror to the show. I fly enough. So Delta and I are like besties, you know what I'm saying? Like me and Delta and all the people in Delta, like we're like together. So I now have Delta roles. I have all their apps. I get all the back apps, I'm following planes wherever they are. I got my system down. This never happened in my life that I got to an airport and the gate says 8 a.m. we're leaving. And just to, for those of you who are just following me, I got to go to Miami. I'm in St. Louis. So I got to take a plane from Miami, from St. Louis to Detroit. Detroit's one of the major hubs, cross half the airport in Detroit, which I can do because I'm on Mossad, and then get catch flight to Miami. I'm just landing at 4 o'clock. My friend, I'm not that old, he's older than me, even though we're in high school at the same age. My friend is making a wedding for his daughter. Okay? Come on. You're like, no, I'm not 55. She got married young and better. So that's really why. So you guys aren't even here yet, but like, can you picture like your best friends now getting married and then having kids that are getting married, like, it's a bloodline. Like, can you imagine, like, how pumped I am for this wedding? My buddy, we played basketball together. Like, forget that. So I get to the airport, and the board says, you know, departure 8 o'clock, and there's no airplane. I look at my app, and it says, you know, delayed 15 minutes. I sit down. I come back. It's now, whatever, let's really be 8:15. I come back. It's like, you know, 7:45. There's no airplane. And I said to the lady, I'm like, how can we be thinking 8:15? There's no airplane. Like, the airplane, it's got to come. People got to get off, right? She's like, I don't know. I'm like, you're the Delta lady. What do you mean you don't know? Like, what else do you do back? Like, she's like, no, I don't know. I'm like, where's the plane? She's like, oh, the plane's here. I'm like, we're here. She's like, it's in the airport. I'm like, it's in the airport? She's like, yeah, like, it's in that other terminal, but they just won't bring it over. I'm like, why? Like, we don't know. I'm like, wait, what? Am I a flying spirit now? Like, what just happened over here? 7:50, 8 o'clock, 8:05, 8:15, no airplane, no idea, nothing. Like, it's like 8:30, I'm sitting there, there's no airplane. I gotta get to Detroit by 11, or 11:30. And then something happens and my heart drops. The board changes from 8 a.m. departure to 11:15 departure. That means I get to Detroit an hour after it's over. So I call the Delta, I go, listen, I go my buddy's way. I have decent status. Like, really buys in. He says, okay, I got you. Hold on. 30 minutes later, he says, sir, it was President's Day weekend. He says, sir, there is not one open seat on any airplane in the entire Delta fleet going to Miami today. I said, you got it, kid. He goes, hold on. Comes back 30 minutes later. He goes, sir, there is not one seat in America. They called American Airlines for me to see if they get me a seat because they felt so bad on another air. There was not one seat going to Miami. That's President's Day weekend. It's 11 o'clock. They're all sold. Sorry. I put John LaGuardia going home. So, 2 weeks before that, I was speaking at an event, and there's a rabbi named Rabbi Shalom Arush. I've heard of Shalom Arush every Garden of Amunah. So he was the main speaker. I was opening for him. And he got up and told the best story. He said there was a woman that came to him who couldn't have kids for 10 years. And she came to him and said, I can't have kids. And he goes, I'm going to tell you what to do to have kids, but you're not going to believe me. And she goes, no, I'll do anything to this. He says, trust me, when I tell you this, you're not going to do it. She goes, I'm going to do it. She goes, I'm not going to do it. He goes, I'm going to do it. Back and forth. He goes, fine, I'll tell you what to do, but you're not going to do it. She's like, just tell me. He goes, I want you to go home every day for 30 minutes, and I want you to thank Hashem for not giving you children. She's like, are you insane? He's like, I told you. Thank Hashem for my problems? Yeah, you don't think Hashem's the care of our hands? Oh, you think Hashem's only there when he's hooking you up? You don't think your problems are Hashem driven for you to be better? Or you think God's punishing you because he gives you challenges? That's how it works. Oh, that's how it works? If you're good, you get gold coins, and if you're bad, you get hit? Oh, okay, welcome to Judaism. That's not how it works. Doesn't mean we understand everything he does. We don't understand why we have to. And everyone knows the one person that we look at and go, there's no way, I got that. For most of us, on a daily basis, the challenge that we deal with are Hashem's way of gifting us certain growth that we need to do, and sometimes you can't get past that if it's all about you. What you got to do is connect to God, say thank you for your problems, because when you do, you now take Hashem and put him in your problems. What you're saying is, I'm not in charge of this world. I don't know what's best for me. You do. Guess what? You're in charge now. Thank you for not giving me children for 10 years. Shalom Arush. I didn't make this up. Standing in front of a packed audience, tells the story. She goes home, and in a year, after 10 years not having kids, he is the tzaddik at that kid's, at her son's breast. And I'm thinking, holy cow. And I say to him, I'm so blown out. I'm so upset. I get on the airplane to LaGuardia. I'm waiting for my moment, right? Like, I'm waiting. It's gotta be a good story, right? I'm waiting for, like, sitting on the airplane, and the door's gonna, like, open up. You know what I'm saying? I'm gonna hold on to a guy. And he's like, don't let me go. I'm like, I'll never let you go. And I need your grandmother. And the holidays, I'm like, for real? Like, I'm gonna come back, and, like, then we're gonna be best friends, and, like, we're all related. And then I'm gonna, like, his kid's gonna marry my kid, and we're all gonna be, that's, I'm waiting for the moment. I'm like, okay, God, I'm ready to roll. Like, do I have to fly the plane now? Like, you know, you're waiting for the moment. And there's no moment. I just landed in LaGuardia. That was it. I got on an Uber. That was it. It was an okay Uber. I got back to my house. There's nothing doing. I'm so disappointed by the end of the story. And I'm so upset. You know what I'm doing the whole time? I kid you not. The whole day, you know what I'm doing? Thank you, Hashem. I'm so upset. Thank you, Hashem. Thank you. It's not helping. I'm not a holy guy. Thank you, Hashem. Thank you, Hashem. Nothing good. And then you ever have this feeling when you miss something, everything that you were going to be doing, you think about, I would have been here, I would have been here. You ever, like, torture yourself this way? I'd be, you know, with the airplane, I'd be getting in the cab, I'd be probably seeing you right now, I'd be eating right now, I'd be dancing right now, there it is. And every second that it happened to me the entire day, I'm like, thank you, Hashem, thank you, Hashem, thank you, Hashem, thank you, Hashem. Thank you. To the point in which I was so over thank you, Hashem, that I was walking the streets, and by the way, God bless Apple AirPods, because I get to talk to Hashem and myself all the time and not be considered crazy. And I'm like, thank you, Hashem, thank you, Hashem, thank you, Hashem. And I got to tell you something, honestly, it was really helping. Because at the end of the day, I don't run the world. At the end of the day, he does, and he's Beker of Arutz. And he does. He loves me because I'm his son. I don't got to be perfect. I just got to be his son, and I'm his son. And he's not stopping me getting a wedding because he's trying to punish me on first grade. My job is to turn to him in difficult times and go, guess what? Thank you, Hashem. Give me good. Shana Tova Umasuka. I'm thanking you for everything. All day. I go back to my office. Thank you, Hashem. Thank you, Hashem. Thank you, Hashem. I said it, thank you, Hashem, for the first time in my life. For the first time in my life, I said it 5,000 times. I get home after the whole day. My wife looks at me and goes, Charlie, some guy came to the house. I'm like, which guy? She's like, I don't know, a guy. I'm like, you just open the door for a guy? She's like, yeah. I'm like, is he like Amazon the guy? Because he comes to the house a lot. It's like, no, he's a regular guy. I'm like, a regular guy knocked on the door. She's like, a regular guy knocked on our door, handed me a package, and then left. I'm like, is it a bomb? Is it my gun for the guy on the Mossad? You never know. If they can hand me a package, I see now I'm on a mission. She's like, I don't think so. Calm down. I go to my dining room table, and I kid you not, on my dining room table is a package. And the package is filled with paraphernalia. And the paraphernalia has three words on it. You know what the three words are? Thank you, Hashem. Some guy randomly dropped off bumper stickers, car magnets, baseball, out of nowhere. And I looked up and I got it. So everybody wants Hashem to split a seed for you, but you know what happens? Sometimes God says, I'm not doing that. And I'm not going to explain myself either, because guess what? I run the world. But let me tell you something. I can't give you a hug. Here's a fist bump. Here's some swag. And I did a video about it. And the guy called me 3 days later. I never met him in my whole life. You know what he said to me? He said, I was at a meeting once. I'll tell you how I got the swag. It's unbelievable. Watch the chess game. I'm at a meeting a month earlier. And a guy's in the meeting. And he's wearing a thank you, Hashem hat. And I go, I love that hat. And you know what the guy says? Thank you. Anything else? No. He gets up and leaves after the meeting's over. That's it. What happened behind the scenes? I'll tell you. He calls his friend and he goes, my buddy Charlie likes the hat. Can we get him one? The guy goes, no, because those hats are expensive. I don't give out hats. And then he goes home and goes, you know what? Maybe I should give him a hat. And he reaches out for the guy who runs it, and they happen to be the other night, and they go, if you give him a hat, you might as well throw some more paraphernalia. And together, they put together a whole package for me a month ago. And it sits in his car the entire month. And he never drops it off. Are you ready for this? Watch Hashem Beker Baretz. On Thursday, that I'm in the air, this guy's having his worst salesman, his worst month of the year. He's not making any of his numbers. Nobody is calling. He has one large order that the guy won't pick up his call. And he's like having a panic attack, so to speak. And he gets up and he leaves and he's walking the streets in 5 pounds and he goes, and he's just saying, thank you, Hashem. Like, if I'm having a small month, I'm not in charge of the world. Thank you, Hashem, for this whole month. Thank you, Hashem, for the guy who can't pay me back. Thank you, Hashem, for all my problems. And he's walking the block. I'm in the air. Thank you, Hashem. Thank you, Hashem. If you can, for the movie people here, split the screen for a second, okay? Screen here, Charlie, and I'm in LaGuardia. Thank you, Hashem. Thank you, Hashem. This isn't helping. Thank you, Hashem. Thank you, Hashem. When am I flying the plane? Thank you, Hashem. I'm on the side. That's what I'm thinking here. This guy walking the streets in Cedarhurst going, thank you, Hashem, for my bad day. Thank you, Hashem, for my bad week. Thank you, Hashem, for my sale. Thank you, Hashem. Thank you, Hashem. Thank you, Hashem. He comes back, ready? He comes back into his office. And there's two things happening in between. He comes back into his office. He sits down. And you know what happens when he sits down? The phone rings. The guy who owes him money for a month says, I want to pay back. And then the phone rings again. And again, and again, and again, and again. And he makes more money in one day than he made the entire month. He gets up and goes, Hashem, I want to do something for you. What should I do? And an idea pops into his head. Why don't I take the thing in the back of my car and deliver it to Charlie Harar? A month after I said it was a good... And he drives into my house. He hands my wife the thing. As he gets in his car and drives away, my car pulls in the other side of the block and comes right in and goes, what's this doing? That just happened? I'm was picturing him walking the block to Cedarhurst and me in the Uber going, thank you, Hashem, thank you, Hashem, thank you, Hashem, thank you. Can I tell you something? Since that video, I must have gotten a dozen to 20 calls from people saying, you got to hear my story. Someone stopped me on the street and handed me a book called Thank You Hashem that Shlomo Arush put out of all the stories of people that he told to thank you Hashem. And I read it with my wife and I was in tears. Because when you live a life and it's us and him and he's separate from us, that's not how a Jew lives. That's why Judaism tastes so bitter to so many Jews. Because it's about a bunch of old rituals and kissing up to an old king. It's not a relationship of self-exploration. You don't walk the streets with your dad. You don't walk around and feel like I am invincible. Not because I am good. I am good because I want to get closer to him. Not because I have to buy his love. You think he's holding back health? Because he's trying to get me to say more words? Maybe there's a bigger plan. My job is to remember. Someone told this to me, it's the best line I've heard in a long time, that I am the only picture in God's wallet. You know why? Just because I'm alive. That's it. I don't got to be a tzaddikus. I have to try to be a tzaddikus. I have to try to learn more. I have to wake up in the morning and be the best Jew that I can be. Not because I have to kiss up to, because that's the path that's going to give me the greatest life that I can have. Because if he loves me and he runs the place, he knows what he's doing. But a Jew that walks around in the lullaby effect, thinking that I got to just check some boxes and get on with my life. You know how many ortho robots are out there today, like running to shul and hope? You know what, by the way, yeah, I don't know if you guys experience this because you guys are women, but in the male world, we're coming up to the greatest yantif of our year. You know what that is for guys? You know what the greatest yantif for a guy is? Anyone want to guess? It's coming up on Sunday. Yeah. What? Awesome. You've heard this before. No, you did on your own? God bless you. That's awesome. You're amazing. You know what it is? Beis Nisan. You know what Beis Nisan is the greatest holiday for a guy? Because it's the first day where you don't say Tachanun for a month. You go to any show in North America right now, the Chasen King finishes Chazor's shots. He's like, what's the show? What's the show? What's the show? He's screaming, Skada. God turns around and goes, what's the Skada? Is there a Chasen now? Is there a Bris? No, it's Nisan. The guy's like, it's Nisan? Oh my God, April, May, June, July, August, September. I don't have to say Tachanun for a month. Guys are doing conga lines with their tefillin and shul. They keep giving candies to babies. The wife's like, why are you so happy for him? Doc, he goes, honey, I can't even say it. It's just so good. I can't even, like, the words can't come out of my mouth. Sit down. There's no Tachanun today. And if it falls out on a Monday or a Thursday, you know why? Because I don't want to daven. You know why I daven for? Because I ortho-roboted it into my brain. My davening is just power of nothingness, just to kiss up to a king. God's like, come on. You're my people. I brought you out of this world to show the world that I'm here. You walk with me. You talk with me. When you daven to me, you daven to me. Dig in. Find me in you. You'll come alive. You'll be a Jew that bounces with the clarity that in my good days I hold your hand in my dance, and in my bad days I use you to cry. You're the shoulder I cry on. I never leave you. So why is our holiday called Passover for? Well, this will really end. Because we always, whenever you study Torah, we make a huge bias. The bias is we forget to appreciate the path. If we know the result, nobody feels bad for Yosef for sitting in jail because we know he's going to be the king of the world. Nobody feels bad for Sarah or for Rivka or for Rachel because we know she's having kids. So when you hear the story, you miss the nuance because they're going through it and you already know it's going to be okay. We miss the nuance of Pesach. Be a Jew in Egypt and you are at Makas Bechoros now. Every single plague until Choshech, for the most part, it was Egyptians against Jews. And then Choshech hit. And what does Rashi see? What does the Medrash say what happened to Choshech? Anybody knows? Chamushim Alu means how many Jews died in Choshech? Up to 80%. Now, 80% wasn't because they were all Machal Shabbos. They didn't leave if they didn't want to leave. The Jews that didn't want to go didn't get to go. Which means the guy next to you seems like a good guy who didn't want to leave, died in Choshech. And Medrash tells us that people were still up there in Azara. They were in the Mem Tet Shari Tuba. They weren't all Tzadikim. So you're a regular Jew in Egypt. It's Makas Bachoros. And God says, sit down and lean. And all of a sudden, what do you hear? It was Egypt. They weren't living in mansions. They're living in huts. What do they hear? Screams. Every house, someone was dying. The mother was seeing her kids die. They were running through the streets. You know, everywhere. It was death. People were screaming. They're sitting in their house, eating Korban Pesach, with their family around the table. And all of a sudden, it gets screams, screams. We're dying, we're dying, we're dying. You know what they're thinking? It's our turn. Last plague, he killed 80%. He's killing the rest of us out. I'm not better than the guy down the block that died last plague. I'm not in his heart. You know what the Jews are thinking on the last night of Pesach? This is it. They were looking at their children and going, it's over. They were kissing their firstborn and saying, goodbye, honey, I love you. They were dying on the inside. They didn't know they were free. We know they were saved. How did they know they were saved? A minute ago, he killed all the Jews. Of course, they're not better than them. And it gets louder, 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 and all of a sudden, just when it can't get any louder, it gets a little bit quieter, a little bit quieter, a little quieter, a little quieter, a little softer, and softer, and all of a sudden, the screams of death seem to be further and further, and the psalm is further and further away. You know what they realize? They're not going to kill tonight. God passed over them. And they were chosen to be the few that get to leave. You want to know why our nation is called, why our first holiday is called Passover? Because you know what it means to be in our nation? It means to feel that you were deliberately chosen to be here. You're not in this room because there's a mistake. You think there's a Jew that's picked that just happens to roll in because she's number three in a family? You think God doesn't know exactly? And everyone in this world is wonderful. God knows exactly which neshamas he picks. Really? You think you weren't chosen to be sitting in your chairs? You know how many Jews right now are sitting in colleges and universities that aren't even close to giving them any level of Jewish education? You know how many people that I meet that are your age that are saying, I wish my parents would be able to give me a Jewish education? You know what I mean? Women your age right now have no shot at the things that you have in the back of your mind. You think that just happened? You think you just stumbled into this? Really? No. Passover. Pesach is God's way, is our way of saying, when we chose it, you picked me. And the reason why I don't think you're with me every day, and the reason why I don't think thank you, Hashem, works for me, because I don't think I'm worthy enough for you, Hashem. That's what Tim Meyer says. The greatest challenge in our generation today is not that we don't love Hashem enough. You know what the greatest challenge in our generation today is? We don't think Hashem loves us enough. This Jewish guilt insecurity of I'm not enough makes me walk out of this door and say, he can't be in my life because why would he? And our nation is built off the first moment. We became a nation? Not when we walked out of Egypt. You know when we became a nation? When every Jew said, I was chosen. We became a nation at the moment of Pesach. When that family looked around and said, holy cow, we're here. Because I guarantee if you were in that house that night, they were in tears. When that scream faded away, I bet you mom came to her oldest son or daughter and kissed him, and they hugged around the table and said, and they go, why? And mom goes, I don't know. Just did. That's when we become a nation. Not when you move from sand dune A to sand dune B. You become a nation, you wake up in the morning, you look in the mirror, and you go, Hashem picked me because he loves me. Why? It doesn't matter why. But it's an honor to be part of this nation. And it's an honor to be able to serve the King. My dad is the creator of the world. what else can I do more than try to get to know him in my life? Through my career, through my talents, through my relationships, through my food, through my world. That's what it means to be a Jew, to care of our hearts. And every time you look for Hashem, you know what happens? He comes a little bit more in your life. Panini says it's called Emunah Hi'amshacha. When you go to him, he draws to you. And my bracha to you, and I beg of you, do not allow your Judaism to just be kissing up to the invisible king, doing a ritual because we did a ritual as if that's what we're in this world for. My bracha to you is that you should walk around and feel chosen. Not only are you chosen for this nation, you're chosen for the challenge. You're chosen for the good. You're chosen for the challenge. If you walk around and start to think this way, and start to see him more, and start to thank him for things, and start to make that way of life normal for you, and start to question, and you look at your own life and say, I will never, ever have a full self-expression if I don't tap into the divineness of myself. I want to see that soul in my friend. I want to look at a friend and see what's inside her. I don't want to just have friends that are there that are convenient. I want to have friends that when I see her, we're connected spiritually. If that's the bar we set for ourselves, then we are continuing the legacy of our great-grandparents when they left Egypt. And we are erasing Amalek out of our hearts. Because that's our mission. Whether you're a doctor or a lawyer or a social worker or an Indian chief, that's all the detail. We together have a mission to walk with Hashem and to see him in our lives and to feel that we are just as chosen as those people that felt the first night. That's the power of Orin Mighty. That's Pesach, in my opinion. And if you look now in the next 2 weeks and you prepare yourself and you find a way to plug in and plug your soul into the spirituality of the day, and Ritz Hashem, you come out, you're a different human being. You may look exactly the same, you have the same nature, but you're 1% closer, and 1% closer, and 1% closer. And then one day, someone says, what do you mean? I look at you. Of course God's in this world. Look at how you act. Look at who you are. Look at how you breathe. And you hold on to the hand of that same ancestor, that same thing up at the Hassan. My bracha to you is that you should be the women. And I mean this, b'chol nafshi, b'chol gufi. You should be of the women that are here to greet Melech HaMashiach. Because you know he's coming here. I've got to tell you something. For those of you who know me, you know what I say. Mashiach's coming through JFK, you know that, right? Because if he flies into Newark, he's not Mashiach. That's my first question. He's like, hi, I'm Mashiach. I'm like, how'd you get here? He's like, I caught a United flight to Newark. I'm like, you're not Mashiach. Because if you're Mashiach, you take a Delta flight. Not at all. You take a Delta flight to JFK and come to the five towns. That's just me personally. I didn't see it in a safer. But I got to tell you something. He's going to come into Shem. You should be alive for it. And when he comes, my bracha is that when you meet him, you know what he should say to you? Thanks for bringing me. Because in a world where everyone forgot that I live in this, Hashem lives in this world, in a world where everybody thinks Hashem lives in the Shemayim, you're of the few people that dug in, stood proud, and have carried the legacy of what it really means to be a Yid. Thanks for bringing me closer. You should be zochah to see that in my days. Thanks so much.